people here. As councillors would be aware, this is the first time we've had our briefing separated from the council meeting, which we hold next week. So it's an opportunity for us to ask questions of the officers and potentially any public who do deputation presentations to help us in our decision making for the council meeting next week. I would like to let members of the public know this has been recorded, so if you do ask a question or give a deputation, then that will be recorded and will be made available on the website within the next 3 days. So the first thing on the agenda is public question time. It's the opportunity for members of the public who would like to ask a question about something that is on the briefing agenda to ask that question. So if there's anybody that would like to ask a question, please come forward, state your name and address the council. Any questions? Okay, so let's move on. Attendances, apologies and applications of leave for leave of absence. We've got an apology from Councillor John Daniel.
Mike Costa earlier is an apology. He's got a broken wrist, so he won't be here for a few weeks. No, he fell off the table.
What's he doing on
this day?
He's
on a motorbike. Councillor
Wilson?
I have a leave of absence to report, and tomorrow.
Deputations, I believe Lisa Last, would you like to address council on the verge treatment policy, which is on 10.6. Would you like to come up and think? I think the way
And also potentially a checklist providing further information to people who weren't planning on, felt that was fairly confident information. So it would just, I guess, summarise down for people and they kind of just get through, okay, I'm not going to use too much fertilizer, yes, I would use the approved for planting, this, that and the other. A point in there about mulch that should be above the level of the curb around, but most of the verges around are already higher than the curb, and that would result in people having to cut the dig back the soil, and that could be danger and sort of treatment control that comes with that. And we just wondered if that was something that needed to be in there in that way, maybe the same that grand construction for roads or the footpaths or something along those lines, because I don't think the many churches would provide that for it. And our final point is about structures. So we understand now, and thank you for the clarification, that in the local law, it does actually say you shouldn't have walls and build structures, which is potentially different to creating focusing in the state order. So that's other things to understand. However, we do know that there are a number of structures already on the virgin site, even the little library as well. Things that actually add a lot of value to, you know, our community. We're wondering what is actually the process for people to get that approved. Obviously it is against the local law, but there's obviously a process where why they think that approved and whether that may be able to be in the guidelines for people who have really great ideas that we're going to have to do. And if there weren't very many of these things as well, there could be additional compliance on there, because I do totally understand that, you know, the first transport of somebody putting a car fence somewhere might be very different to someone who thinks they might try out being a handyman and putting something out. No disrespect, but if I were probably the really good first transport. So, you know, having an approval process or something highlighted in there, put that in every word. That is it. If I did forget one point, so sort of wrong order, apologize for that. With regard to the recommended maturity of pre-approved plant species list, again, it just implies that you need to get an approval. It's just a title, it's just wording, but it's a document where they're trying to communicate for people what needs to be in the species, perhaps it is called endorsed plant species or recommended plant species.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Lisa? So, can you just walk us through what happened last year for you guys and some of the pros and cons of having the application? Can you go into more detail about that? Did it hinder people from wanting to do their virgin through your group?
My experience from talking to quite a few people about potentially wanting to do their verge was that I did speak to people, some people took 2, 3, 4 months for them to get up to an approval. I mean, you know, people take a long time to get to anything like this, but that was one thing I experienced. Also, that people didn't necessarily know they needed to get an approval for something I encountered. For people who hadn't got an approval, people were always talking to me about their reasons. So I think in any case, there needs to be some education to have a group on this thing. some people, it's just something they don't get up to, and the fact that you're just out there every day on the weekend doing something, you know, and they're waiting for a service to start, but, you know, if you can just get a bit more than you do, you know. Can I ask if you, feel that the wordiness of the documents and the having of the encounter is off-putting to people?
Houses, normal housing on a road, and those houses situated on a junction or intersection.
Yeah,
there is a recognition that those verges and junctions will need to be lower.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I ask is one of French and French Street. Was very nice and low, and now it's grown up and creates a long side issue. Not so much in a stop sign, you just don't want to stop. This is a good baseline that people will travel through it.
Sure.
And you can see the collision issue there, so at least the people really need to be really mindful of that.
Well, that's
going to
remain unchanged between the two versions of the policy and guidelines.
Lovely plants. Had a good morning.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Other questions? Thank you, Lisa. Really appreciate it. And just as you forgot to do something, you said I forgot something extremely important, so I apologise. I did not acknowledge at the beginning of this meeting that the meeting on the land of the Murra people and to have respect to that meeting, so I apologise for that. On my list, and as I was speaking, I was just trying to rack my brain for what I needed to remember. So, apologies.
Thank you, thank you,
thank you, Lisa. All right, so moving on, are there any declarations of interest? Okay, so we'll move on to reports, and because Lisa has just given us a deputation on item 10.6, the village treatment policy, we will address that item first. So if anyone has any questions for the officers?
I have a question in regards to, there was
Yeah, I was just wondering, is that a change in policy direction with, you know, some conversations about related issues?
No, it's not a change in policy direction. It's simply what the Oxford report shows is that there's two reports that basically the track changes showing what's been taken out of one report to correct the merge policy, and one report has been demonstrating critical maintenance. The word slashing has been used simply to indicate that it's not a mowing program that we had up there. People are looking at coming along and on our program, which is in a couple of months, to come along and slash those verges.
Yeah.
So it's not a change in that word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions? So I've learned a new word really before this got policy, I think. Frangible.
Mm-hmm.
Frangible.
Yes.
I've learned a new word. Did anyone else?
I do.
Yep.
I'm learning ballistics tonight. It's a projectile aimed at the body and then it splits.
Right. I hope that's not what we've got in mind with our work policy.
No,
it's like about compliance.
In my experience, that was
that's not my report. It means if something hits it, it bends. It's not breaching anymore.
Perhaps some thought might be given then to the choice of words we use to make it. I think in this context, it doesn't necessarily relate to all
the time. Right. It's usually about objects in the village which are hazard vehicles.
I guess what you're saying is that it's not clear to people when they read the book, you know what I mean?
Well, it wasn't clear to me.
Yeah.
So I like to look at myself as a person. The other question I had was that there are a lot of villages in the town that currently don't require this policy. I don't require this policy. For example, there are villages with pea gravel, which would fall outside of compliance with this. There are also villages with some pet. What needs to be done if this policy is passed?
Well, we do have a compliance officer that actually goes around and does inspections, and often letters are sent out to people once they become aware of a non-compliant village, often once we do that, then the people will often complain, saying, oh, I've got several money, to make a little bit of options. But really, big gravel is a slip hazard for the pedestrians that fix that. Graveling up on the road or on the footpath, and as you indicated, synthetic grass cracks adds to the heat load, so can't resolve that that can be permitted. So as those non-compliant verges are identified, we do actually go out and write the letters. So we have done a series of letters in the last, over the last 12 months or so. So what we do is we then look at, this is not a change of policy, this is a current policy. So if we become aware of it, we'll go back maybe and using our aerial imagery to find out when it's installed approximately, and then we'll go back to what's the advice is there when it's fine.
But this new policy, though, is not going to make any existing verges that are currently compliant non-compliant.
No,
it's more likely the other way around.
Yes. The local law has been in place since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Council's permissible verge treatment has been in place since 2012. Like that. So any treatments that occurred after 2012 still need to comply with this policy.
Just a quick question, Simon. I noticed some of the one walking around the Oz campaign that there were quite a few developments had out of the wonderful park on the road. So that's how long has that been out of policy that we wouldn't have?
2012.
So is that
pre-2012?
What's the story there?
Pre-2012, well, as I said, we'd go back and look at our aerial imagery to see whether that was installed correctly.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
So, Lisa queried what the improvement process is, what is your structures on a village now?
So, council have had the municipal village treatments, which identifies what you can and cannot put in. So, for example, somebody's got a park bench, for example, they would need to write to us, this information sheet, which we can place onto our website, and available for, and we do promote that through, but we haven't promoted that through the website, because it's called the Municipal Bird Treatment Guide. I just can't see it up on the page. I've got it up here, but I can't tell you what page I'm on.
The proposed new document, though, there's that, that present doesn't make reference to that. So if someone is looking for, to get guidance, and they read, say they found the document on, whatever the actual time is.
It says under our local law, Division 3, Clause 2-3, that a municipal bird treatment does not include a wall or a bird structure. And not forming or in hazardous nature. A retaining wall or a safer wall could be regarded as being not forming or not permissible under the local law.
So, I'm looking here and we've got examples of non-acceptable materials, so including nouns. My mind, we're losing the whole intent of why we were going to overhaul this policy, and that was to create more freedom for people to do attractive bird treatments. So my concern is specific things that you're putting forward as being non-acceptable may well have the effect of actually just creating a uniform look like this account, which I think most people who want to be really lovely villagers may not want to be just a uniform look, so I'm a bit concerned about that. I understand the need to balance things between insurance obligations, trespassers and all the rest of it, but where do you draw the line? It seems to be a bit extreme in some areas.
Your council has determined what is in the past council made a determination of what acceptable materials were and what non-acceptable materials were. The council made that determination back in 2012.
Right.
So that's again included that information sheet saying that non-acceptable, what an acceptable material is, which is compliant with our local law. So there needs to be, I suppose, some continuity between our local law and what the policy is saying.
You see what I'm saying though? On one hand, we're wanting to reduce red tape, but on the other hand, we are asking for a high level of awareness about a multitude of things that can't be used. So we have a little bit of a conflict happening there. So.
Well, under the local law, now if you look at these guidelines, you can actually install a landscape into the bridge. To that requirement. If it's, say, for example, didn't comply and as Councillor Wilson has indicated, he's identified a couple of villages in the town which have got sea gravel, well then we go back to those people and say to those people, you're not compliant, you need to comply with the local law. So at the moment, people can go out there and the landscape is emergent, there's guidelines that are there, they're illustrated to them, say to them what they should do, there's diagrams there which gives them just an indication of what potentially they can provide on their villages, and also there is a list of plants that they can actually plant. But what we've also said, as long as the plant has been selected below the 0.75 height, edible plants you can put, basically whatever plant you want to put there, we've just made some suggestions in regard to other plants that would be suitable. So I think it's the flexibility there that you're looking for.
Further questions on this item? Okay, so back to the top, so item 10.2, this is the draft town of Bassendean Development Bonds Policy. Are there any questions on this item? Obviously, increasing the bonds is an
wondered if the prices that you quoted, whether that's actually a reality, because I was looking at some of the things you say, like driveways and fences, and I did think that probably the cost a lot more than some of the prices that you, or some of the dollar amounts that you quoted there. So I'm wondering whether ideally it would be better to have higher. You've got here, what was it? For a group dwelling, originally it's $1,000 or $500 per unit, whichever is the highest figure. And you're actually looking at taking that up, I think, to $2,000 and $1,000 per unit. So what I'm getting at is putting the driveway in, fencing, landscaping, all those things. It occurred to me that if you had an 8-unit development, that's $8,000.
It's based on the value of the development, so I think it's 2% of value. So if the value sort of increased, the bond would have increased.
So is there a reason why you're, I mean, obviously, if you're using the logic that inflation will keep, is there a reason why you have a increasing the commercial industrial?
Because over the last 20 years, the prices of the development would have increased significantly. Like landscaping, where it's cheaper for the developer decision becomes, but if it's a significant increase, there would be a pushback from the development.
This is for private. This is for private, if we go back to private here.
As opposed to commercial.
As opposed to commercial.
But rent.
Well, I've just been through it, so the fine makes it $10,000, because it is cash.
No, so if you listen to that.
Right, okay.
So is it likely that any commercial or industrial development bond would be any less than $10,000 as a cash rate rather than a percentage rate?
Of course, potentially, yes, I can't do the math quickly, but it's based on the value of the development, so it could be a less than.
Can I ask, obviously there's a lot of people that have been, you know, and they're not complying and not wanting, or not requesting their bond back. We have a sum of money here somewhere that's come from bond money, is that correct?
That's certainly money held in trust for bonds.
Mm-hmm.
There's been sometimes the developers or the owners have forgotten about the bond money after the board has been changed, it's not too long ago. Some of those have asked for a bond after the league said no, we're not going to apply to the league.
So that's someone.
And other than some just sitting there because the developers want.
But that's some of money sitting there, we can't really do with that, or?
No, it's money money to be out of restricted cash or trustee card. Same.
You get interest on it?
Yeah, very good.
Yes, they do, yes, we get interest on it.
Yeah, we get interest on it.
The town returns interest.
I just went through the plans, I've got it online, figures later today. Yes, no, that can do.
But if you want money back, we don't.
No. That was a very good, lazy answer.
So if the developer defaults, does that money then get remitted back to the town?
No, no, so it's, there's no agreement that allows the transfer of money to the town, but with bonds, if it sits there for 10 years in the same place, it can be transferred into the municipal.
Out of curiosity, as councils where you work, where they didn't have this development, what mechanism would they use to achieve the results that you're after, that is to make people comply?
I guess there are different scenarios for different types of development, so the majority of development that occurs in local government, there's not a mandatory follow-up on the inspection, so in most cases there's not a final inspection of development, so single houses, additions to dwellings and the like, there's no mechanism that requires follow-up action. The types of development that do require a final inspection and a final sign-off by the local government are the larger residential and non-residential developments. So the mechanism is basically not providing that final sign-off, or well, not providing that final sign-off generally, that's the mechanism. So for example, if we deal with, and we still use that system now, we've got an application where 8 multiple dwellings have been constructed, we have to provide a certificate to indicate that the development has been completed in accordance with the approved dwellings.
Okay, so if I can move on.
Okay, so item 10.3, third time appeal rights. I've got a few questions. First of all, I was just hoping to have that plan included. Could you just clarify for us what the existing third party appeal rights are?
In very simple terms, there are no third party appeal rights.
Okay. I was interested, I saw that our staff didn't provide any comment on this, letting our well that was still covered. Is there a position that our staff didn't have put forward? Did you take that opportunity?
No, we did actually provide comment. So the matter was the subject of consideration by council as opposed to June 2017 ordinary meeting.
There was a list, sorry, I shouldn't say my comment, there was the quorum, the number of what you got that participated, and we didn't display those lines, is that correct? questions about some of the options that are presented. So with some of these third party appeals, what would happen if there was more than one person or group that was going to appeal? Would it be one appeal process or?
Limited, the appeal rights are limited anyway.
I think the question is if the party appeal rights were introduced.
And so you had, say, two neighbours and they both.
Potentially could there be more than one appeal?
Yes.
It actually says it's limited to those parties who have made a submission.
Correct, but if two neighbours have made a submission and two separate neighbours, each want to lodge a third party appeal, can there be two third party appeals?
So any of the DAP groups, if they were appealed, would then go to the SAT, is that correct?
Do our community already have the ability to appeal a decision at this level? Therefore, then it goes to that. So haven't they had the opportunity at local government level to make an objection to an appeal from the government? We don't have that at local government.
No, so the opportunity at the moment is that a neighbour can basically make representation to council if they're notified and invited to comment on an application or provide comment to officers if they're dealing with an application, but they don't have, there's not an ability to escalate an application in terms of what they go through to a gap.
They could come and give a presentation to council seeking to have a modification or a decision over.
Correct, so they can participate in the decision making process, but if the council made a decision that they were not happy with, they can't do anything from there at the moment.
And this is the third party.
Correct, so if they went through that process and the council made a decision that they weren't happy with, that would then give them a further avenue in which to try and have that decision altered.
But they do have the ability to try and change council's mind on a particular decision at this level.
Prior to the decision actually being made, but not after the decision has been made.
Can I just repeat the point as well that the DAPs have got three independent members on there to come to represent the town, so
yeah, I'm aware of that. I mean, if you do get get a circumstance where you don't get multiple challenges to a decision. It's not going to cost me. We've had examples of that in my team, where you get people as much as neighbours either side. People in the street are checking as well, so it can become a little unwieldy.
And it would protect your cost, because then if they have the right to appeal and you go to SAT and you have to get staff or get your paid external people in certain situations, is that correct?
So that's actually a problem with the outcome of the community, is that multiple people are doing it. And it's going to bog down some of our processes and make it more litigious.
Administration, central report to council, or council paid council made a decision. So this
one that we're working on amending, or is it what's currently in place?
So there's a currently endorsed version of the local planning strategy that was endorsed by the planning commission in December 2014.
Yeah.
So that version talks about applying a base code of 125 across the town, and then an RP gets in place of corner lots.
Okay, so it's what's already in there, and it's flagging what we're going to do that we haven't actually done yet. Is that what we're doing?
Well, effectively, the local planning strategy hasn't been put into just letting councillors know that there's other changes that the planning commission have made, and potentially there are some implications that should be
taken. Thank you. I thought that's what it was, but I just wasn't sure whether it was going to contemplate whether it was the one that we're currently planning over here, and it was talking about maybe it might be doing the same place with something so really interesting.
Yeah,
great.
I don't know if you'll have to touch my farm after.
Basically, we heard about 30 calls that we received for major services. I'm not aware that that's just one person. I mean, 30 times for a different person. I have to get those records quite a bit.
And if it's possible to maybe group together the different things, so are they broadly around safety concerns, or are they identity for residents who are on the street concerns? What are the types of
out of the 30, there's been a couple on people who not having their rubbish bins picked up because the cars were parked by their property. So that's just an education thing to decide. And a hydrant that H-Mark hadn't been moved to Northern Road to identify where the parking place was with the hydrant. The rest of it basically dealing with the air access and their problems.
And that's what the parking driveways,
that's correct. Yeah.
Have any concerns been raised about the safety of the two parking bays closest to the Oldford Road end?
I'm not aware of it at the moment. It probably has been, but I've tried to get the advanced service to provide that feedback to me. I think it's possible.
So, having when we were on our inspection there, I noticed twice on two occasions cars that were crossing over on the road straight through the intersection were all the way on the other side of the road where there's a solid line, and that's the only way possible to cross over the Port Road, given that there's a car park there. Is that taking you to account at all when you...
The whole of the park has been undertaken in line with Mainline Statics. We present those details to Mainline before we approach to the check, and they signed it off. So that part hasn't changed. Yes, it's been standard. It still doesn't mean that it's as safe as drivers have to drive to the conditions of the road. An indication wherever you put is how people drive to it. In this case, in some cases, we may have been more exuberant and placed a little bit closer to the corner, but legally, and it's a standard right here, part of that problem. So our agenda at the time was to place as many car parking bays within the vicinity as we could legally within what should stand around those within that area, and that's what we achieved. Maybe that we may have been for the area itself, we may have got a little bit too far, but
about no parking signs. Are you talking about a metal sign on a pole, or are you talking about painting the road?
There's two ways to do it. You can put a yellow line along the side of the road, and that means no parking on that side of the road. But in a case like this, where you're putting that there and having something different, you're better off trying to put both the yellow line and a couple of no parking signs along that way.
Okay, so 10.7, the State Football Soccer Centre, the town's position.
So, just through the chair. At the moment, our local law does permit us to have a line marking in regards to yellow line marking. Some local laws in metro areas do permit that yellow line to indicate no parking, but ours doesn't. So, ours is something that changed very shortly.
Okay,
In this instance, we would simply be putting parking signage, but the post have a sign displaying what the parking or restrictions are on that sort of line.
Okay, once the local law has been passed, we can go to the place.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. And my final question. So those signs would make it clear that parking would just not be allowed on the road, but it would still be allowed on the road?
Yes, that's right. The parking signs would normally say no parking on the road. No parking. If it's no parking on the road, it would be no parking on the road or the direct stick like that.
Before you're changing the local laws, I think that's relatively soon that's coming up.
It's really this year, yeah.
So, is there any reason why this needs to be done before we might change the local laws?
Changing your local law just does take quite some time because it has to be advertised, it has to be in the whole administrative process.
Yeah, no, I just.
So, that's another question that's coming to me. So, given that a number of people do use their verge for parking benefits, it's a well used indirect park, is it possible to have a different treatment along that section to make it easier to cut the park there?
Yeah, it could, but we'd have to allocate some money to do so.
Now, a little question.
Has everyone finished with that one? Mm-hmm. Okay, so 10.7 State Football Centre and the time's position on it. Any questions?
My position is always has been strongly opposed the being by the state. Offers this great body to take over the Ashfield open space as they can. It's clumsy, it's political, but I don't want to see us out of the game. The question is, do we want to exclude ourselves from any further negotiation? Yeah.
I'm not sure that's a question that the staff can really answer.
You've got a couple of options here that haven't been discussed. And I see some form of a centre as integral to the development of Ashford.
I guess what we have currently is a council resolved position, which is why the officers have come and said this is how you should go, because we can't be seen to be opposing what council has resolved to. But the fact is that, unlike other decisions, this one was time sensitive. The government said, are we going to get elected again? And if we are, we're going to do this. And in fact, after the election, we contacted the department and they said that there were no funds for this project we had.
I'm just concerned about the black and white nature of our response. We agree that we can serve or know where we're going. I'd like to think that we could do it better.
So we've got a week to come up with an alternative.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I think we have to think.
Okay, any other questions on that one? Okay, so we're going to 10.8. This is the governance policies that were recently reviewed at a workshop.
is that someone on the ramp outside with a hearing aid could hear what was happening in here when you were behind closed doors. So that you'd have to have a kill switch. So because audio loops go beyond walls. The companies that we spoke to said that the system that's used by most local governments is a microwave, and they provide something that people can wear around their neck if they want to use it, and they can connect with their hearing aid, or they can have one that, that automatically picks up and uses headphones. That won't even go through a window, so once you close the doors, you can go behind closed doors without having to worry about someone sitting outside taking notes. So we ask these groups that have done installations by the councils for the purpose of amplification, recording, and even live streaming options, and the companies that responded have all done installations for local governments, both large and small, and I guess the most modest one we've had in the details of the past.
So my question is, when is this put forward as a notice of motion to the Minister for Hutchin? There was the intention for it to be as an economic cause possible.
Sure.
And obviously some of the quotes have come in greatly in excess of the amount that comes in the office's recommendation. Is there anything to stop us, like our procurement practices, from identifying exactly what we want and giving that to officers to get quotes on the purchase?
If someone has the expertise to say this could be done by doing this, this and this, then we could go to another competitive process. We asked them to come up with what they consider the economical options. We didn't ask them to come up with a Rolls-Royce solution. We asked them to look at the room, what its shortcomings were, and it's not a great room for application and recording. The two are at odds with each other in many respects. And so the companies that came that actually were experts in the field setting up council chambers for the purpose. And it is in every case, I believe, it's a microphone system where the mayor has a priority. As soon as the mayor speaks, everybody else's microphone turns off, but otherwise they press the talk. It greatly enables the recording of the information, and it's a system which means that everybody in the room can hear, and the recordings are of a quality where you can actually work out exactly who said what. That being said, there are some legal opinions around that you shouldn't retain audio recordings. We had one that McLeod's produced some years ago for local government, and we've had some advice from our insurers about some of the pitfalls.
So that particular piece of advice that was in the attachments,
yes.
Was that specifically
obtained
for us, or is that something that was a generic advice?
A generic advice to all local governments. It's something that we've raised and which they provided a general guide to all local governments.
And what time frame is that
for this? If I remember correctly, it's in the last 5 years.
So I appreciate staff providing advice without fear and favour being
do it.
Yes.
But if council hadn't been aware of these cautious ideas from insurers and solicitors, and we failed to tell you, and then later on something happened and you said, well, did you know about this? And you said, no, you didn't even ask for it. Then we would be remiss. So I think in all cases I'd rather get a little slap across the wrist for giving you too much information than not telling you there is a risk associated with what we're doing. And not just to the council, of course, but to the people who ask questions and speak in the gallery, because we don't have privilege in this chamber.
No, but if hypothetically Nonny was to say something untoward, then that would be actionable per se, because she said he was being recorded in office. So I don't think that has any bearing on the story or not.
I think it's the risk of the council.
That's why we made the statement the council may wish to ignore this advice and change the policy of our large donor. It was done on the basis that we thought you may not be aware of the opinion and you may wish to protect yourself, but we also acknowledge that some local governments already do large donor. So if you wish to pursue it and that is your prerogative to do so, then we would amend the policy accordingly.
So note that on other occasions,
I don't know that we would always provide you an alternative if we didn't agree with us as officers, but I'll take it on board.
So even if there's a council resolution?
That's different, but I wouldn't agree with you to say that we would always provide you an alternative.
Yeah, sure.
In this case, the director had the legal advice and had spoken to our insurers and felt that if you wanted to go down this path, it might be wise to have a talk to the insurers. But they're different than our legal advisors, they're the ones look after our risk, and you thought it might be a worthwhile exercise before you proceed it to actually have that advice.
Can I actually also query the quotation prices and what have you? Were the companies that quoted directed to actually have this hearing, this loop put in? Because remember, that was from a suggestion, but I think a suggestion from Peter Pearson from the Public Gallery. And, you know, my query is, were those companies directed to put that in?
mayor did say at the time, I'm sure that the CEO will ask about the including the quote. And we did ask them to look at that. The audio that would have been considerably more expensive because we would have had to rip the floor up.
And I also noted on the paper now, one of the quotes that I had something like 14 microphones, and I did wonder whether that was that volume of microphones was necessary, given that we are the same council. And that was something that swept through my mind when I read it. So, you know, do we actually need a gold plated system?
I don't think the one that we recommended was gold plated. I think it was a reasonably modest system when you consider what it does and what it's replacing. That's my personal opinion.
Can I just go back to the question I was asking before about the procurement? And you said if there were specific things that council wanted to purchase, you said that we could then go out to a competitive process.
Yes.
Does that mean going out to companies and asking to quote them again, or are offices able to go to a shop and purchase something off the shelf at the same price that the mayor also purchased it?
We have to go through a competitive process if it's over a certain value. Our purchasing process says if it's this much, you can get a verbal quote. If it's this much, you can get a written quote. If it's this much, you need to get two written quotes. It's based on a structure which is supposed to prevent the corruption and to provide a competitive framework for all businesses and to provide the council, as it's required to do, with the best value. Now, the best value does not mean necessarily the lowest cost. It's supposed to look at it, and we're talking about from packets of mails to trucks. A good quality product which lasts a long time is easily maintained, etc., etc. So the whole procurement process is set up around that system. And I'm not a sound expert, and we don't employ a sound expert. We could employ someone to come in and say, you could do this, we go through a competitive process, how could you do this really cheaply? We could pay someone to do that, they could come up with a list of components, and we could purchase those components.
So our IT people, you
know, people, our IT people are not sound people.
So if I have somebody who could come in and provide that information, that would not be a problem?
I would prefer that we did it than the council did it.
So this is just someone who gives you the advice of what equipment we could get.
Yes, I know what you're saying. I'm only saying what my preference would be.
So not somebody who's going to be attending the job, but you actually just give us advice. You're preferring that...
Only because I think councillors are at risk whenever they get themselves involved in the administration. If it turns out that it happens to be your brother-in-law who did it, and I mean, I can't speak for all councillors. I'm only just saying that from a councillor's point of view, there is a risk involved with you doing that and me allowing you to do that. So I would prefer to ask someone if they could provide us with some advice on a low-cost option for doing this.
Yes, sir. The range, the cost range we've got.
The cheapest one is
to give everybody an idea of what we're talking about.
The cheapest one's about $14,000.
Okay, and the most expensive?
It's just short of 50, I think.
Yeah.
$48,000.
Okay. Next question, is there an opportunity to go outside the group of companies that have worked for councils across Western Australia and others? I say that with all respect, but they do work with councils, they have a different mindset, and perhaps if we went out to somebody a little more innovative, a little more cost conscious, and for them to provide us with an idea of what they could do. I was just looking as we were talking, Philips provide a product with four speakers, guaranteed high quality, 360 degrees, it comes in somewhere to 15. Specifically for recording conferences. They make some very interesting guarantees, and that's $1,600. I'm not saying that that's the product you would use, but my point is there's a range of you need to go outside the family companies that have been doing business with councils forever.
You ask for companies outside of those that did that. At the time when we were searching for those companies, most of them didn't want to quote, they were too busy with around Christmas time. The two that did were very expensive, and so we went to Walder because we knew that those companies knew what we were looking for, and it was in a council chamber environment, and what we were trying to achieve.
Most of the official companies are extraordinary. They seem to be leading up to Christmas, so I don't understand why you got a poor response.
You can imagine how expensive it would be to spend serious dealing or Gosling or something like that.
But we have a very poor building, a very poor room as well, and we have a very old system. So
I've counted that and say that audio visual guys set up in some of the most appalling locations without many problems. It depends on the equipment and...
Well, my understanding is that you want to live stream and have a reasonably accurate recording. And therefore you don't want everybody talking at once, and you want to be able to clearly discern who's speaking and who's not, and you want to have some control over how that happens, and that you don't want the amplification that you want in here to interfere with the recording process. And that is, and again I'm not an expert, that is an issue that was raised. And we do have a range of prices here. Council can say, we don't want to accept any of these. In fact, you can ask us to withdraw the item if you wish, and we can go back and have a look at another option.
Sorry.
A cynical person might suggest that that's the intention of the recommendation, but my price is...
Well, no,
I wouldn't actually. I wouldn't go there.
I don't want to go there, and I didn't write the report.
No.
I think we might
just move on. Does the person write the report or something?
He's got a broken wrist and he's at home.
That's good.
Of course.
Okay. 10.10, the appointment of councillors to committees. 10.11, the quarterly report. Is there a question, Kat? My interest is what it's been.
moving on to the notices of motion, 11.1 was mine in relation to the caretaker period. Then 11.2, Councillor Hamilton's relating to the Casamere roof. 10.3, Councillor Clinton's LED light report. 10.4, Councillor Brown's industrial land in Ashfield. 11.5, Councillor Wilson's police strategy.
10-2 a file of documentation.
Yeah, I think we all need to comfortably read that before the meeting comes to close.
And I would welcome any questions before the meeting as well, if you require some clarification. I'm not saying I can necessarily answer it, and I don't want to use the services of our lawyer to answer the questions because but we'll do our best to get the questions to me early enough we may be able to get the answer. Enough of that without it costing a fortune.
11.6, Council Wilson's Higher Facilities Motion. 13.1, appointment to committees. 13.2, CEO contract. Okay, so if there's no further questions, I'll close the briefing session. Thank you, everybody.
Interesting.